Okay, today's daf is Bav Metzia, daf Samech Ches. We left off on daf Samech Zayin Amud Beis. I believe we got to the two dots on daf Samech Zayin Amud Beis. The last word on the line is Pshita, and that's what we're up to. Pshita. Says Gemara, Pshita ba'asu de misalki va'amar lo mistalakna. Hakamar de lo mistalakna. If you're in a place where the minag is that when the lender takes the field prior to the loan being paid, that the minag is that whenever the loan is paid, the borrower can pay the loan and get the lender off the field, meaning even if the deal was that the lender is supposed to keep the field for X amount of time until the loan gets paid, but if the loan gets paid prior to that, the borrower can say, look, I'm ready to pay it now, I want my field back. If that's the minhag, but the lender says, lo mistalakna, look, I'm not interested in being able to be pushed off the field, look, if that's the deal, when he gives you the money, when he's lending you the money, so that's binding. He's allowed to make that a condition to the loan. But what if the minig is in that place that you're not misalik, the lender from the field, that you can't just throw him off early if you pay up the money? And the lender says, it's okay, I'm willing. At the time of the loan, he says, I'm willing to agree to lend you the money, even if mistalakna, even if we make it like a situation where you're allowed to be misalik me from the field. So my, what's the din in that case? Tzarech l'miknemine alo. Do you need to do some form of kinyan on the right to be misalikim, or do you not need to do any form of kinyan? Just the fact that he says he's willing to be pushed off the field, is that good enough? So Rav Papa Amar lo tzarich l'miknemine. Rav Papa says no kinyan is necessary. He gave his word and that's it. You don't need any sort of kinyan. Rav Sheshes Prid Rav Idi Amar tzarich l'miknemine, that you do need a form of kinyan, v'hilchsa tzarich l'miknemine. And the halach is that you do need a form of kinyan. If you look at Rashi on the third wide line, tzarich l'miknemine di lo kanimine di bura bi'almahu, because if you don't do kinyan, it's just words. V'yachalom arlo ashana min haminag, and the guy could say, look, let's just keep whatever the minag is, and the words are not enough to change what is the minag medina. So words alone would not be enough to guarantee that you have that right to be misalikim. He would need to do some form of kinyan to give you that right. Amar Ezel va'esi zuze lo achil. Right? What if you're dealing in a place where you're allowed to be misalik the guy, right? So the halach is that if he's going to come and give you the money, so you're not allowed to continue to eat from the peiros of the field. So if the guy says, Ezel v'aisi zuze, I'm going to get the money right now, I have it already, I'm just going to pick it up. So lo achil, you got to stop eating from the field because he's coming with the money. Says Rashi, hol v'hamos muchanim lo, since the money is all set, v'lo nasin lo rishus lio shomet v'yochel, and you don't have the right to continue to eat. We're talking about a place where as soon as he has the money, he could be misaliki from the field. So you don't have the right to continue to eat once he's going to come up with the money. So then certainly, if he says he has the money, he's just going to get it. So lo achil, you have to stop eating at that point in time. However, ezel ve'etrach va'aisi zuzi. What if the guy says, let me go and work on it, and I'll get you the money? Which implies that he doesn't have it already muchan. He thinks he can get it. He thinks that if he puts in a little bit of ishtadlus, he'll be able to come up with the money, but he doesn't have it yet. So Ravina Amar Achil, Ravina says, look, if he's just saying he's going to get it, or he's going to try to go to get it, that doesn't do anything for you. That doesn't mean anything. You're allowed to continue to be ochel. Umar Zutra Breit Rav Mari Amar lo achil. But Umar Zutra Breit Rav Mari says, no, even that is something. If he says that he's going to be tareach and get the money, so it's getting closer. He might really actually have the money. And therefore, lo achil, you're not allowed to go and eat. V'hilchasa lo achil. Now, lach is, you can no longer eat from that field. Period. Rav Kahn of Rav Papa of Rav Ashi, lo achli ben achyasa. Rav Kahn of Rav Papa and Rav Ashi had the minhag that they would not be ochel from the field, even with deducting from the loan, right, a set amount each month or each year that they were eating from the field. They did not use any nachyasa arrangements to help pay off the loan. They would not eat from the field and deduct a certain amount from the loan for the payros that they were eating from the field. Ravina, achil ben achyasa, but Ravina had no problem doing that. His minhag was that he was ochel ben achyasa. So Tosfos is very bothered. Wait a second, in yesterday's daf, we said that even if you hold that achil ben achyasa, if you look at the top of the page, we had three lines from the top. V'tzor b'mid rabbanon afilu ben achyasa lo nechel. even if he's going to be deducting from the amount of the loan through his eating a set amount, still he's not allowed to be ochel. We mentioned yesterday, Tzor Mirabanan, Rashi said yesterday, Tzorech liyashad rachav, uleskade shaf bemutrlo, he has to be on a higher level. Tzor Mirabanan, Talmud Chacham, has to be so above board that he has to, even things that are technically mutter, he has to be machmir about. Rashi said, pen yilmadu mimenu, the zalzal be surin, lest people learn from him to be mezalzal in the surin. So Tzor Mirabanan, even with Nachyasa, is not allowed to do this. So what, Ravina was not a Tzor Mirabanan? He certainly was. Why was Ravina ochel ben Achyasa? So maybe you'll say, well, who says Ravina holds that a Tzor Mirabanan is not allowed to be ochel ben Achyasa? Maybe it's Machlokas Samarayim, and Ravina holds its mutter. So it says, Tosas, you can't say that either. If you look at Tosas, Ravina ochel ben Achyasa. Tema, de la elam, in Tzor Mirabanan afil ben Achyasa lo nechel. Previously, we said a Tzor Mirabanan is not allowed to be ochel ben Achyasa. Va'od, we said that there was a machlokas Rav Acha Ravina with a kitsusa arrangement. What was a kitsusa arrangement? So we had a couple of opinions yesterday what the definition of kitsusa was. We'll go with the first definition, that for the first 5 years he's ochel from the peros without nachyasa, and after that they do a shuma on the peros, they evaluate the peros, and that value of the peros is deducted from the amount of the loan. So there's a machlokas Rav Acha and Ravina, whether you're allowed to make such an arrangement. And even the one that holds that kitsusa is okay would say that nachyasa is not okay for Tzor Mirabanan. So even Ravina himself, you see, holds that nachyasa is not okay for Tzor Mirabanan. So how could it be that Ravina was ochel ben nachyasa? So says Tosos, two possibilities. Va'om Ravina Tam, the Ravina lo haya rotza lita l'ashem, v'lasos atzma Tzor Mirabanan. First possibility is that Ravina maybe did not treat himself like a Tzor Mirabanan. He didn't hold himself to be a Tzor Mirabanan. Now this is a very tricky thing. At what point does it become your option to hold yourself to be a Tzor Mirabanan or not to hold yourself to be a Tzor Mirabanan? At what point do you say, no, what was the whole idea? Like Rashi said, why does a Tzor Mirabanan have to be machmir? Not because he's a Balgaiva and he says, oh, I'm a Tzor Mirabanan, so I should act with extra chumras. No, it's so that other people shouldn't learn from him. So it doesn't matter whether you think you're a Tzor Mirabanan or not, it matters whether other people think you're a Tzor Mirabanan. And if other people are going to view you as a Tzor Mirabanan, they're going to learn from you. You could be the most humble guy in the world, but still you need to take these extra levels of chumrah upon yourself, because people are going to learn from you. They're going to do, as we said yesterday, one level lower than whatever it is you do. So this teretz of Rabbeinu Tam is a little bit difficult. He didn't want to be litol as Hashem. He didn't want to treat himself like a Tzor Mirabanan, unless you're going to say that there are certain advantages that a Tzor Mirabanan has. For instance, we mentioned just a couple of days ago that when it comes to doing business, right, that a Tzor Mirabanan, if he has to sell something in the market, so all the other sellers are shut down from being able to do business until the Tzor Mirabanan finishes selling his wares, and that was standard practice. Tzor Mirabanan was exempt from taxes, things like that. So it could be that if he did not take advantage of the advantages of being a Tzor Mirabanan, so therefore he was not viewed as a Tzor Mirabanan because he didn't take those advantages, right? He didn't take his parsonage or whatever else, and therefore he was allowed to not take the chumras of a Tzor Mirabanan as well. Anyway, that's the first teretz of Tosfos. The Ravina didn't treat himself like a Tzor Mirabanan. Va'od nimtza muga b'sifro shel Rabbeinu Tam rafram b'makom Ravina b'plukta de kitsusa. Second teretz also says it could be that there are girsaos that it wasn't Ravina who said that, who was involved in the machlokas whether kitsusa is mutter, and who said that even if kitsusa is mutter, nachyasa is aser. It was rafram. So don't ask how could Ravina do nachyasa. Didn't he himself say that it's aser? No, it wasn't him. It was rafram. And the third possibility, v'yesh mefarshim, dahach nachyasa de Ravina Hainu kitsusa. It's really a misnomer over here. When we say that Ravina did nachyasa, it wasn't really a nachyasa deal, it was a kitsusa deal. And we said that it was a machlokas between Ravina and Rav Acha, whether kitsusa is mutter, and it could very well be that Ravina is the one that held that kitsusa is mutter. And over here, when we say nachyasa, what we really mean is kitsusa. Anyway, says the Gemara Vayter, Amr Marzucha, my time and demand of achal benachyasa. What was the reason for the one that was achal benachyasa, meaning for Ravina? So he says, well, it's very similar to what the Torah says about Steachuza. If a person takes a field that's his Yerusha, that's his family inheritance, and he's makdish it, so the halacha is that it's subject to pidyon. Someone can come and be po to the field. Now someone else, even not the person who's makdish it, can be po to the field. But if someone other than the person who's makdish it is po to the field, he only gets to keep that field until Yovel. And once Yovel comes, it's nechlek l'kohanim. The field gets divided to the kohanim. So the person who is being po to the field essentially is only buying really the rights to the fruits of that field, because that once Yovel comes, he's not going to be able to keep that field long term anyway. So he's buying the rights to the fruits, to the annual production that the field gives him. What's the annual production? Well, we don't actually measure how much the field gives him. Instead, there's a certain set amount of about a sella that he gives per year for the pidyon of that field. He does a cheshbon. There are 32 years left till Yovel, a sella per year for 32 years, and that's what he gives Hagdish to be part of the field. So essentially, he's buying the rights to the produce of the field, even though the produce is not going to equal the exact amount of money that he's paying for the produce of the field. So he says, even though he's eating many peros, still the Torah says, all you really have to give is 4 zuz. All you really have to give is a sella. So hachanami lo shna. So over here also, it should be no different. Even though the guy is the lender, is enjoying all the peros of the field, it's good enough to knock off X amount, a certain set amount, per month or per year, that doesn't come close to the actual value of the peros of the field. You see that it doesn't have to equal the actual value of the peros of the field. Umanda, so that's the svara for the one that for Ravina, who held it was mutter. Umanda asar, and the one that says asar, what are you going to do with the precedent of steachuza? Don't you see that the money paid does not have to equal the value of the actual peros you're getting? So Amalach will say, no, steachuza hektishiv, rachmanu ukmei apidyon. That's a din in hektish, that the Torah tells us a din, that you're allowed to be poda something from hektish. Hacha halva'ahi, but over here we're dealing with a loan. And whenever we're dealing with a loan, we have to be extra careful and extra aware that there's something called ribbis. And umechzik ribbis. This looks like ribbis. So because it looks like ribbis, it's going to be problematic. Even though in other contexts, if it weren't a loan, we wouldn't be as concerned. But this is a loan, so we have to be extra concerned. Amar Rav Ashi, Amrli Sabi de Masa Mechasya, the elders of Masa Mechasya told me, Stam Mashkanta Shasa, that an average regular mashkon, a stam mashkon that's given, meaning a field given to from the borrower to the lender in exchange for the loan, is supposed to last about a year. So the main nafkamina, what's the nafkamina, what it's supposed to last, meaning when it gets paid up, doesn't he get it back? What's the, whenever it is, and prior to paying it back, doesn't he not get it back? So what's the nafkamina? Nafkamina is the achel ashasa masi mesalik lei, that once he's been ochel a year on that field, once the lender has had it for a year, the borrower can be misalik him. V'lo lo masi misalik lei. If the lender has not had it for 1 year, the borrower cannot be misalik him. Says Rashi, we're talking about a case, v'afilu ba'asra de misalki. Even if you're in a place where the minig is that you're allowed to be, that the borrower is allowed to be misalik the lender from the field, even if that's the minig, that's only after 1 year is up. You have to at least give him 1 year on the field prior to being misalik him. Va'amar Rav Ashi, Amruli Sabi de Masa Mechasya, the Sabi de Masa Mechasya, the elders of Masa Mechasya, told me something else. My Mashkanta, they said, you know what Mashkanta means? Where's the Lashon Mashkanta from? Deshchuna Gabei. Because the closest neighbor to this field is considered the lender who's holding on to the field right now. L'may nafkamina, what do I care that he's called a neighbor of the field? What are the halachic ramifications obligations of being called a neighbor? Does he have to smile and say good morning? Does he have to take in your mail? Right. Well, what's the nafkamina of becoming a neighbor? So the dina de bar metzra, the nafkamina is for dina de bar metzra. The halacha is that if I want to sell my house, the first people I have to give the opportunity to buy the house to are my neighbors, my next door neighbors, because the house or the field is more valuable to my neighbors than it is to anybody else. Because if my neighbor wants to expand his property, let's go with a field in an agricultural society. I have a field, so if my neighbor wants to buy extra real estate, so if he buys a field at the other end of town, he's going to need to buy a whole new set of equipment to work on that field, because he can't schlep the equipment from one field to the other. It's going to be a big tircha and a big expense for him to deal with two fields that are separate from each other. But if he gets a field right on his border, so it just becomes one continuous field, he's not going to need to buy extra equipment, life will be easier for him. So because it's more valuable to him than it is to anybody else, so va'asisa hayasha va'atov dictates, being a mensch dictates that you give the neighbor the first right to buy the field. That's the halacha called dina de bar metzra. He's the one that has the greatest attachment to that field. He's the one that has the first right to buy it. Now, you don't have to sell it at a loss to him. You don't have to sell it to him if he's not offering you the value, the proper value of the field. He has to offer you what it's really worth, but once he offers you what it's really worth, you do need to sell it to him. So too over here, when the borrower gives a field to the lender, should the borrower ever be interested in selling that field that the lender is holding on to, since the lender's been enjoying that field and using that field for a certain amount of time, the borrower should give first rights to the lender. Meaning, and not only that he's a neighbor, he's the closest neighbor, which makes it sound like the borrower should give first rights even before the actual physical neighbors. He should give first rights to the lender, because why is the lender the closest neighbor? He's on the field. He's not next to the field. He's on it. So he's the closest neighbor. He's the one that gets first rights. Amar Rava Lesilchsa, now a new statement. Rava says, we've discussed a number of different halachos. So Rava says, the halacha does not follow the following three things. Lo ketarshi papunai, velo kishtari machuznai, velo kechachiri narshai. We don't paskin like those three arrangements that have been described in the last couple of dapim. What are these three arrangements? So the Gemara is going to explain each one. Ketarshi papunai, ketarshi drav papa. That was the tarshi deal of Rav Papa. If you remember, Rav Papa, we said a few days ago, on Daf Samachay, was a beer brewer. That's what he did. He made his money in the brewery business. There were certain times a year where beer sold for a cheaper price in Tishrei, and other times a year where it sold for a more expensive price in Nisan. Rav Papa had no need to sell any beer when it was selling for cheap. He had plenty of money to get by. He was very financially secure. And his beer was very safe. He had plenty of room to store his beer. So he had no need to sell it during the cheaper time of year. For as far as he was concerned, he was going to wait and hold on to his beer until the more expensive time and sell it all then. But there were people who needed beer at the cheaper time of year. And Rav Papa said, look, I'll sell it to you now, but only if you pay me the higher price. And you can pay me it in Nisan, you can wait till Nisan to pay me, but I want you to pay me the higher price. And Rav Papa said, look, I'm not gaining anything by doing this. This is what I would have gotten anyway. It's the exact money I would have gotten anyway, and it's at the exact time that I would have gotten the money. Because I'm not taking the money now in Tishrei, I'm taking the money in Nisan. So I'm really not gaining anything by doing this deal, so therefore it's not ribbis. But they told Rav Papa, from your perspective, you're not gaining anything. But think about from the other guy's perspective. If the other guy were to buy beer from anybody else right now, he would pay the lower price. But because you're telling him to pay later, the way he views it, you're telling him he pays in Nisan, so he's paying a higher price. That's ribbis. You're telling him, because you have the opportunity to pay later, there's going to be a penalty for paying late. So from his perspective, it's ribbis. So that's why we say, we don't paskin like the Tashi Drav Papa. Shtari machuznai, what are the shtari machuznai? Dizak vile l'ravcha akarna, v'kas vile b'shtara. That they add the revach, profits to the keren, and they write that into the shtar. So that's the shtar machuznai. Rashi explains, shekonim pragmatia mi bali batim. They buy pragmatia, things to sell from bali batim. V'nosim l'tagarim l'machzeschar, and you give it to merchants. So you give it to merchants to sell it retail. for half the profits. The merchants are going to get half the profits. V'shamim kach v'kach schar yeh behen. And you prearrange exactly how much profit you're expecting them to turn. V'zokvin mach s'schar im akeren. And you tell the merchants, not only do you owe me the keren of the items that I'm giving you, you owe me half of what it's expected, the profit that it's expected to turn. V'kosvin b'shtar, and that's what they would write in the shtar. Ploni chayev l'ploni, kach v'kach l'zman ploni. Because you invested in the wholesale items, and you gave it to the retailer to sell, and you expect it to turn a $10 profit, you include in the shtar of what he owes you half of the expected profit. So what's the problem with it? Is mi yemer dava ravcha? Who says there's going to be a profit? So it's going to turn out you're charging him for something that you're for just lending him the items. It's not that he's giving you any profits, because there may not have been any profits. Amle marbar amemar leRavashi abba avad hachi. Marbar amemar said to Ravashi, you know, my father amemar used to do this kind of arrangement all the time. But if they would come to him and say, look, it didn't turn any profit, he would just believe them, and that would be the end of it. So that was his arrangement. Amalei, so he said to Marbar Meimar, that's great, your father's a big tzaddik, and if he was still around at the time that it comes to a report on the profits, on what, you know, how the sales went, that's great, because he's going to believe them. That's wonderful if he's still around. But Ishach v'nafal shtara kameyasmi mayhavi. What if he dies and the Yisomim are left with the shtar? So that you think they're going to just believe the guy? They're going to say, look, we have a shtar that says you owe us this money, and included in the amount of money was the assumption of gains, was the assumption of profits. So then what's going to be the din? Then it's still going to be a ribbis problem. So kishkaga shiyotzim lefnei ashalat v'nach nafshei da'meimar. It's supposed to teach you, you shouldn't go and say, let's say, for example, you die, or your father dies, because this was kishkaga yotzim lefnei ashalat, and after he said that, ameimar actually died. So you're not supposed to give examples of someone you know dying. You're supposed to just say, let's say there was a guy, Reuven and Shimon, or there was some, you know, theoretical father, and that theoretical father dies. You don't speak to a person in that way. Chachiri narshoi, and what was the third thing we don't pass on like? The chachiri narshoi, the kasviachi, they would say as follows, mashkene planya are leplanya, that so-and-so gave his land to so-and-so, v'hadr chachra minei, meaning the borrower would give his land to the lender, for the lender to hang on to until the loan is paid back, and then the lender would give it back to the borrower in a chachiris arrangement, in an arrangement where the borrower would have to work the land, his own land, what's really his own land, and have to pay like a rental to be able to work the land. So not only is the lender getting the benefit of the payros of the land, he's also charging rent on the land. So emas kanadakni nale. The problem with that arrangement is, when was the lender ever actually kona the land that he could be makna back to the borrower? It looks like he never really had it in his possession at all, that he's able to charge rent on it. But nowadays that they write the following in the shtar, kanina mine, that the lender has been kona it from the borrower, v'shahina kama idni, and he's kept it for a little while, v'hadr chachra kadesh latinol delos b'knei lov and shapir dami, and then he gave it over in a chachiris arrangement where he rents it back to the borrower. That's okay, because it says in the Lashon Lashtar that the lender held on to the land for a little bit. So it's mochiach mitoch haksav of the shtar that there's a little bit of a kinyan from the lender's perspective. So that's going to be okay in order shalotinol delos b'knei lovin, in order to encourage people to lend by giving a lender certain advantages. V'lav milsi, but we in fact do not pasuk that way. Okay, now we're going into the sugya of iska. Just a brief introduction, because we're already running out of time. Iska is when there's a partnership where one person provides all the capital and the other person does all the work, and they divide the profits equally. That's the definition of the term iska. Now, if the way it worked was that all of the achrayos for all the produce or the capital or the product that I'm giving you is on the mekabel, is on the guy who's doing all the work, meaning if the stuff goes down the drain and it just gets lost, or so the mekabel, the one who received it, is going to be responsible for everything, right? And then he'd have to pay the balamamon everything, all of the keren that he invested. It would turn out that the entire iska, the entire all the products were like a loan. It's like I lent them to you, and if they get messed up, you have to pay them back to me. It's a complete loan, and therefore, if there were profits, then the investor shouldn't be able to take any of the profits. Because if they're profits, it should be ribis. Because I'm lending it to you. Meaning, what makes it a loan? The fact that you're achrayi on it. When I lend you something, you're achrayi on everything. So since it would turn out that I'm not allowed to take any of the profits, it would be a major ribis problem. What if it were the flip side? What if the achrayos were on the person, the one who's financing the operation, not the one who's working it? What if it were a loss? The one who's financing it would take all the loss. So then it's true. It wouldn't be any ribis problem. Then it would be a pikadon. It's not a loan. I'm giving it to you as a pikadon, right? And I'm willing to take the loss if anything happens to it. But then it wouldn't be a ribis problem if you give me the profits, because it's still mine. I never gave it to you as a loan, right? So it wouldn't be a ribis problem. The only problem would be is, why would I ever want to enter into such an arrangement? I'm going to take all the risk upon myself. So I would never want to finance you to do business. And in order to keep money working and to keep the economy going and to keep people employed and to keep people with opportunities to make money and not just the rich keeping their own money, you need those who don't have the money need to have people who are willing to invest in their ideas and their business ventures. So we need to encourage lenders to want to invest in these kinds of projects. So we don't want them to take on all of the risks. So the way we do it is we make it half and half. That half of it is considered a halva'a, half of it is considered a pikadon, and you get half the profits, and the profits are split down the middle, and the loss is split down the middle. That's the arrangement that is halachically viable. It's a big discussion. Why it's halachically viable, the major issue we're going to deal with is the issue of the work that the person puts in to the half that's a loan. Meaning the work I put into the half that's pikadon, that's fine. The work that I put into the half that's a loan, so isn't that going to be a problem of ribis? Meaning I'm going around and I'm doing stuff to try to make sure that it sells, and I'm still only getting half of the profits. Meaning the guy who's working, who's doing all the grunt work, right, is still only getting half the profits. And the way we explain it is he's getting the half the profits on the part that's a loan, and not the part that's a pikadon. The part that's a pikadon, he's giving the half to the other guy. But that doesn't account for payment for the actual work. So that's what our Mishnah is going to say. Ein moshivin chanvani lemichtza schar, v'litein ma'os likach ben peros lemachtza schar, ele imkei nosin l'schara kapoel. You need to also pay him a wage. Right, you can't enter into one of these ISKA arrangements unless you also pay the guy a wage for his actual working. You have to pay him like a poel. You also don't give a person tarnagolim for half the profits, or agolim usiach and other animals that you do a shuma when you first give it over, that it's right now worth X amount. Now you raise these animals, and the profits will be split down the middle. Elim kein nosin lo schara malo mazono, unless you also pay him for the work that he's doing. It's the same idea, that it's an iska arrangement. He needs to get paid for the actual work that he's doing in order to avoid any problems of ribis. Aval mekalben agolim usiach lemechsa umegalben osan atchi umeshulashin v'chamar atchitei toenes. But if you don't evaluate the value of the animal at the beginning, you just give the guy the baby animal and say, here, I want you to raise the animal. So then he's allowed to raise the animal and receive half of the improvement of the animal, to the point where the animal is at shlish kedilaso, at the point where he's one third of his growth. Then they could divide the value of the animal. And a chamar as well, until it gets to the point where it's able to carry a burden. So that was the minhag, to be megadol them before the chaluka, and then to be cholik once they're megadol them to that point. So says the Gemara, just going on the first case of giving a chenveni, you provide the chenveni with all the capital to be able to keep his store operating, to be able to start all the startup money for his store, and to provide him with all the produce and the product that he's going to be selling. So Tana Kepol Batel. So you have to pay him a wage. You pay him a wage like a Poel Batel. What's a Poel Batel? How much money? So Maip Kepol Batel. What is a Poel Batel? Says the Gemara. Amar Abayi Kepol Batel Shalosu Melacha De Batel Mina. What would he be doing otherwise? And you pay him the difference between, let's say he were a wood chopper otherwise, and wood chopper is very hard work, and now all he's got to do is sit in the store, so it's a lot easier. How much money would a person be willing to take less to do easier work than he would have taken to be a wood chopper? Meaning, if I'm willing to chop wood, which is hard work, for $100 a day, I might be willing to sit in a store for $80 a day, knowing that I'm going to make less money, but still at least my quality of life will be a little better, will be a little easier for me. Utsricha, and I need to be told both cases in the Mishnah. The Mishnah started with two cases. It started with being Moshivin Lechenvenin the Machzeschar, and Yitein Ma'os Likach Ben Peros the Machzeschar. I need to be told both of those halachos. Ditan Lechenvenin hadn't given me the example of a Chenvenin. I would say Chenvenin, who decided like a Paul Batel, Mishum Tilo Nefesh Tirche. That a Chenvenin, it's enough to give him like a Paul Batel, because it doesn't involve that much work to be a Chenvenin. But if I'm just going to give him money and he's got to go and find the peros, he's got to find the cheapest deal and he has to buy the peros and bring the peros to wherever he's going to sell them and go around and sell it, it's going to be much more work. I might think that you need to pay him more wages than just a pol batel. You need to pay him a little bit more. And had it told me the second case where you provide the guy with money to buy peros, that's where he needs to be like a Paul Batel. That's where you need to pay him as much as a Paul Batel because he has so much work to do. But I might have thought of a Chenveni, Delo Nafesh Tirche, but a Chenveni who doesn't really have that much work to do. Ema Sagile B'mashu B'alma, it might be enough to just give him a Mashahu. You may not even need to pay him like a Paul Batel. Even if all he does is you eat with him a little bit and you dip your chip into his fish dip for a minute. Or you eat one grogras with him. Zel scharo. That's enough schar. You don't even need to pay him like a pol batel. You give him a mashu of something, and that's good enough, I might have thought. Tzricha, that's why I need to be told both the case where you provide the guy with money to buy peros, as well as the case where you give the guy product as a chenveni to sell. And in both of those cases, giving him scharo, kepol batel, is enough. Right, you don't have to give him more, and it's also the minimum. You can't give him less. In both of those cases, the proper amount to give him is kapal batel. Okay, now we're going to have four consecutive prices, all about iska deals. Tan Rabban, kamo hu scharo? How much does he get paid? Bein maruba bein mut divir Rameir. Rameir says anything. It doesn't matter. Whatever you want to pay him, as long as you give him some sort of wage, it's fine. Rabbi Yudah Amar afilu lo tavu limal abitzir v'lo achli mal grograsach zeh scharo. You give him a mashahu. Give him even if he just dips a little bit in the fish dip or whatever, that's good enough. Rabbi Shimon Yechai Amar nosan l'schar mishalim. No, you have to pay him full schar as a full wage that you would pay a normal guy who works in a store for you. Tell him about another brisa. You can't provide, do an iska arrangement with any sort of animal that does not provide profits based on its own work. Meaning if the animal works and therefore pays for itself, by working, it pays for whatever tircha you're going to put into it through the work that it does. So then, fine, you don't have to. Then you don't have to pay any separate wages. But otherwise, you're going to have to pay separate wages. Rabbi Yosef Yudu Amar Shamanasi Izim Nesha Cholvos. Rabbi Yosef Yudu says no. The goats also provide something. What do they provide? They provide milk. V'sarachelim Nesha Gozos V'shotvos Amortos. And the sheep also provide something, even though they don't work, but they provide wool. V'satarnagolos Nesha Yosef Alchalas. And the tarnagolos also provides something and provides eggs. So that's enough that you're not going to have to pay the guy like a pol batel because he's getting profits, because he's getting whatever they're providing in the interim as you're raising them, right? It's not just the increased value of the animal itself, it's what the animal's giving him while he's watching it. So while he's raising it. The Tanakama says that's not good enough because giza v'chalav lo sipik v'schar amalo mazono. It's just not enough. The chalav that the goat gives you, the giza that the sheep gives you is not enough to pay you for all the work you put into it. But the truth is, when it comes to actual shearings and actual milk, no one would have a problem with that. Everyone would say that that's enough money. The machlokes is, what if he's only getting the whey of the milk? Or vitosri, he's only getting the little pieces of wool that come off the animal as it walks through water and gets caught in thorn bushes and things like that. But he's not actually getting the rights to shear the animal. So the Tanakama says that's not enough. You have to give a guy kipol batel. You have to pay him full schar. Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Yehuda savor kavua. Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Yehuda holds like Rabbi Yehuda. Tamar afilu lo tavli malo b'tziyav lochel malo drogasach hazel scharo. Then no, you don't have to give him the full schar. You could just, even if he just dips a little bit in your fish dip or something, that's good enough. So, and therefore, the whey and the little bits of wool that come off as it's walking through the water, that's good enough. As long as you're getting something for all your work of the animal, that's going to be fine. Next price. So, Tan Rabbanan, Maskeres Yisha Lechavet to Tanagolas Peshnei Afrochin. A woman is able to give her Tanagolas to a friend on the deal that she'll be able, as payment she'll get, she'll provide her with two Afrochin, with two of the baby birds that come out of the Tanagolas sitting on all the eggs. Isha Shamal Lechavertov. A woman says to a friend, Tarnagolas shali yu beitzim shalichi. Look, I have a tarnagolas, you have a bunch of eggs. Vaniva at nachlot be'afrochin. So I'll give you the tarnagolas. My tarnagolas will sit on your eggs, and we'll split the product of it. We'll split all the baby chickens. Rabbi Yehuda mati Rabbi Shimon osur. Rabbi Yehuda says mutz, Rabbi Shimon says zasur. Rabbi Yehuda lo bayi schara malo mazono. Doesn't Rabbi Yehuda say that you need to at least pay for the schara malo mazono? Meaning the one who owns the eggs is going to be the one doing all the work, making sure that the chicken is sitting on the eggs and everything. Say ika beitzim uzaros. She does get something extra. What does she get? She gets the beitzim uzaros, the eggs that don't develop properly, that she gets to keep. Aye, but you can't eat those. They're disgusting. So Tosa says, yeah, but if you're not so picky, you can eat them. So she gets that. So since she gets those eggs, that a person who's not so picky will be willing to eat. So that's going to be enough for the schar. Okay, I guess we'll do the fourth price of tomorrow. We're out of time for today.